Hey everybody, welcome to episode 4 of The Great Divide. I'm not going to waste much time this time with an introduction. This is part 2 of our countdown of Big Country's top B-sides and rarities of all time. And so let me just give a brief recap of where we are. We're about to start with number 6, and Svein's list went like this. His number 10 was Bass Dance, Belief in the Small Man. He counted those as one, which well he should. I think he made a great point that they go together. His number 9 was Balcony. His number 8 was Eastworld. His number 7 was Living by Memory. And my list so far, number 10 is Can You Feel the Winter? Number 9 is You Lose Your Dreams. Number 8 is Promised Land. And number 7 was Winter Sky. So let's just kick right into it with our number 6 picks, starting with Svein. Number 6.
Number 6.
6.
We're heading into the mid-90s here, and the Why the Long Face era. I don't think this is House in the Woods, but it's from the Your Dreamer single. They released a couple of those, and on one of them, they have a trio of B-sides that I just love them. They're almost a bit of the Nashvillian inspiration. They have it's basically the songs are Ice Cream Smile, Magic in Your Eyes, yeah, and Bianca. And I love those trio of songs. That's such a juicy single to get, those three songs. And
yes,
my favorite of those are number 6 on my list, and that's Magic in Your Eyes.
Magic in Your Eyes, I knew it.
It just has that earnestness, that big country earnestness. You start playing, and on the surface, you know, Magic in Your Eyes. What a nice title that is. It's romantic, it's beautiful. And then you look at the lyrics. Our mystery has gone. Our mystery has gone. Our mystery has gone. But there's magic in your eyes. Is that good or bad?
Well, you know how I always took that, and I could, you know, this is just the way I interpreted it. I interpreted that as a good thing, and the reason that I did. I kind of looked at that lyric as, you know, being maybe a couple who has been together or married for a long period of time. And, you know, maybe they're at the point where you're not feeling those twinges of, you know, excitement and goosebumps that you feel when you're first in love with someone and trying to figure them out and everything. But you've settled into something that's deeper and more meaningful to some degree. So it's I always interpreted as he's saying, you know, we're way past that initial stage of falling in love with each other, but we have something deeper. There's a magic in your eyes, and, you know, I still love you and have this great connection to you. I mean, that's how I chose to interpret the song.
Yeah, and that's probably correct. There's this one verse that leaves me puzzled, that meantime we're agreeing the causes of my leaving, verse that I believe in, steps that I must take. So is this guy leaving this person, or what's going on? And like all the good songs, this isn't explained. You have to sort of take things as they are and ponder it. And meanwhile, there's magic in your eyes. So it's just an interesting little song, and a good example of, you know, I didn't pay close attention to the lyrics. That's sort of a blessing of not being a native speaker. You can just hum along and like the melody, and for years that's what it was. And eventually it gets a bit more under your skin, and you look at it and you go, you know, okay, that's interesting.
Right.
And exactly. So it's just, I don't know what it's about, and I don't think Stu has ever said much about this. It's just a forgettable B-side after all, so there you go.
That trio of songs on that You Dreamer single is so great, and it's so different too than the House in the Woods songs, which
are more harder edged.
Yeah,
and these clearly were recorded at the same time. They're more softer, more, dare I say, Nashvillian.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, you can really hear that's where he's heading musically. I mean, Magic in Your Eyes and Ice Cream Smile. Bianca's a little more hard edged, but
but you can hear it still within the same sort of feel. Those three songs belong together, so I'm glad they put them all on the same single. It's really a juicy single. You get all of those there.
It really is. The one thing interesting about that song too is the harmonies, the vocal harmonies. They kind of take that three part harmony thing there that Big Country hadn't really done very much. And to be honest, it's something that I've never liked as much because I'm not a huge country music type of guy, but I can appreciate a lot of it. But for some reason on this song, it works completely for me. I mean, I love it. I love the way they harmonize on the chorus, and yeah, it just works great. And I think this is almost another example, not quite to the extent of Living by Memory, but I think it's a nice little marriage of the two styles and the influences of Stewart's Scottish folk roots coming into play with his getting more involved in the country music of Nashville and that kind of thing. It still has a very Stewart feel to the song, but it's different.
Yeah, and it was the first sort of dip into the pool that they continued to explore with Driving to Damascus. They had a lot of songs in this vein, but these three songs have something. None of the ones that followed are quite in this vein. It's like a perfect marriage of the Nashville sound and sort of the rootsier part of Scottish music, maybe.
Well, okay, so my number six, I hate to say that I begrudgingly put it here, but I kind of did, only because of what I keep saying is that I'm a little burned out on the song to some degree. And this is a song that I really prefer the live version of, although I do think the studio version is awesome, or I wouldn't have put it on the list, because obviously, you know, the first version I heard of it was the studio version. And when I heard it for the first time, it was one of those goosebump inducing moments where I just thought, this is a classic Big Country song. Why wasn't this on an album? And in a sense, it almost isn't a B-side, but it was technically a B-side, and it's the song Restless Natives. And it's kind of hard to call this a B-side in one sense, because it was specifically written for a movie soundtrack, and you know, it was the title track to the movie Restless Natives. I remember in an interview Stewart did, he said they were thinking about releasing that as an album, but then they thought, you know, people would have gotten confused and said that this is the third Big Country album and there's only one or two songs with lyrics on it. What's happening here? So he said they decided to release the entire soundtrack as B-sides, you know, to the Seer singles. But anyway, you know, we could do a whole podcast about the Restless Natives soundtrack, which I think is just a masterpiece of music. But Restless Natives, I think, is just an incredible song. The opening is... I love the chords of the opening and just the grittiness of the guitar, but... The one thing that I think, whereas the drum machine kind of helped Eastworld, I think the drum machine hurts Restless Natives, the studio version. And I do believe it's a drum machine. I mean, some people have said it's not, but I think it's clearly a drum machine in there. Maybe there were some overdubs of some things, but I mean, if you listen to the snare part, it's just like that same exact drum machine sounding snare that kind of goes through the whole song.
I agree.
Yeah, and I really think this song could have benefited, and does actually benefit, when it's played live. I first heard this song live on a Big Country bootleg video, was from the Town and Country Club in 1990, with Pat Ahern on drums. And they opened the show with this, and I never expected them to play the song, so I was really excited to see it.
Summer sun and the winter snow. Digging eagle.
this song actually has one of my favorite Stewart lyrics of all time, and that's "Stand here by me until the ways of age and youth are one and same." And every time I hear that, and even just saying it now, I feel the goosebumps go up and down. I mean, I just think that's such an incredible line, and it's such a stirring song anyway. And then when you hear those lyrics and who will raise the torch for those who died, I mean, it's got that whole feel for what I loved about Big Country from the beginning, which is that larger than life type of, I hate to say music to go to war by, but it's got that kind of feel to it, you know, just like this battle anthem that you could see someone rallying their troops by reciting these lines and playing.
Oh, yes.
You know, playing.
Yeah, definitely. I think my sister-in-law said it nicely once. She said that after she listened to Big Country, she felt like just rushing up and saving the world. And I kind of know what she means immediately. You
that's
know,
a better way to put it.
Yeah, it's certainly inspiring, and it's a bit of a get up and go. And certainly in the early days, we talked about this already, that the lyrics are always inspiring, always poetic. There's not a throwaway thing about it. And if anything, seeing the movie kind of ruins it a bit for me. Taking the lyrics as they were, which I did for years before I actually saw Restless Native, the movie.
Same here, by the way.
They took on a certain meaning, and I don't want to imagine two Scottish dopey teenagers with a clown mask and a wolfman mask riding a motorcycle across the moors to capture a bus.
And, I agree. And I don't even like that. I don't even like in the studio version when they have the lines from the movie in the beginning of the song. I don't like that. I don't want to hear that.
And the beginning is so beautiful. It's
that yeah, it almost ruins it.
Yeah, and then they come, Ronnie, do you want to come tomorrow? Aye. It's all finished now, isn't it? you get all of that stuff. And
that's great.
Ronnie, do you want to come tomorrow? Aye. It's all finished now, isn't it? Shot!
Five.
Okay. So we are up to number five, and Svein, we will start with you. Number five, what's your number five?
Yes, this will be a pretty short discussion, I think, because my number five was your number six, so they're sort of back-to-back Restless Natives.
Okay.
The only thing I really have to add at the top of my head is I agree with you on the drum sound, that snare drum sound. That is the one thing that could get on my nerves.
Right.
The rest of it sounds pretty ferocious, just like the playing. They really are full tilt on that song. And the only thing to add about the lyrics is, as with all the other songs from the Restless Native movie, it's best to forget the movie and make your own associations.
Exactly. Well, that's good. I mean, I think we've said all we can say about that song, and that's a good choice. We're definitely very like-minded on that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have a similar type of thing for my number five, because it's Eastworld, and we've already talked about that a good bit.
Yeah.
The only thing I'll say about that is I remember hearing that the first time when I got the Alone CD single. And that was the first – Alone was the first thing that I heard, you know, that was going to be on the Buffalo Skinners album. And I really liked that song a lot. But Eastworld, to me, was superior in most ways, except for maybe the drum machine portion. But as we talked about, the drum machine really works great on that song.
It does.
Yeah, and I still, to this day, it's one of my not only one of my favorite B-sides, but, I mean, it's certainly up there in my favorite Big Country songs. Just love it. But, we dissected that quite a bit, so I don't really have much else to add except for I think you talked about the great guitar parts, and I can
Playout part, it's tremendous.
It
the
really
last
is.
2 minutes, it's just a playout, and that's wonderful. It's kind of like Into the Fire from No Place Like Home.
Yeah, yeah.
Wonderful long playout session with a catchy guitar solo. That's more catchy than it is clever. But that's part of its cleverness, I assume. But it really, really works.
Four.
Anyway, okay, so that's Eastworld, and I guess we're up to number four. So what's your number four?
My number four has not been mentioned yet, so I'm wondering if you have it. I would assume you don't,
okay?
Because this is it is one of the trio of songs that we got on the vinyl release of was it You Dreamer? I suppose there were three songs there, and you already mentioned Can You Feel the Winter as one of those. But the one I like the most is Golden Boy Loves Golden Girl. Yeah, so that's my number four, and it just struck me as extremely, melody-driven, very, very catchy. It has that catchiness that so many country songs just do. Extremely, you know, you can hum it along. Everything is hummable about the song.
Yeah.
And powerful. The lyrics, you know, the topic is as old as you can get, you know. Girl loves boy, or vice versa, as the case may be, but the girl doesn't love boy.
Yeah, it seems so, like another one of those breakup songs, you know.
Yeah, they flourished in the 90s, didn't they?
Yeah, they really did. They really did.
But it's cleverly done. It's sort of a twist on it. And the golden boy and golden girl, I don't know. The golden child?
Right.
So, but I don't know. It's a bit poetic. It's one of those songs that in the mid-90s where a lot of songs weren't poetic, this one tends to be. Even for the subject matter, you know, as classic as can be, you know, boy loves girl, girl doesn't love boy. But it's written very poetic, just like, you know, the other two songs from that single. And part of the attraction for these songs were that they only came out on vinyl.
Exactly.
All the others were on CD singles, and these were vinyl, and I think finally we got them on rarities.
Yeah, and they were very hard to find for a while there, too. I mean, very difficult to find.
Yes, exactly. So, and that's always part of the attraction for collectors. Finally, you get them and you can play them and obsess over them. But I think this one really holds up. It's a very good song. Kind of belongs nicely in the period for Wide Long Face. They had that guitar-driven, very melodic songs. But this is a bit more of a throwback, kind of like Can You Feel the Winter? It has something about the sound. And I was listening again to it earlier today, and it struck me that, wow, you know, it's it doesn't sound very mic'd up. Like, the drums are kind of in the room. And the general sound, it makes me think of Steel Town a bit. That it's
exactly.
Super crisp.
No, I agree with that completely, yeah. And I, that's kind of how I felt in talking about Can You Feel the Winter? There was like a Steel Town vibe to the sound of that. And there is like a just a real industrial feel almost to the music.
Yeah, and dare we say muddy production.
It is muddy. It is muddy. Yep.
Yeah. Straight from the rehearsal rooms.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I like this song a lot too. I like this would probably be my second favorite from that 12-inch vinyl. Mm-hmm. I think Hardly a Mountain is decent, but not quite as good as the other two.
Right.
I like this song a lot. The one thing that might hold it back for me is the verse. There's something about the verses musically that doesn't really grab me. It seems a little, I don't know. Sometimes the verses in the song strike me as being a little plodding, if that makes sense. But I do love the chorus. I love when the chorus kicks in, and there's some great guitar playing in it, some really cool lead lines, as I recall. I haven't heard it in a while. I need to go back and listen to it. But yeah, the lyrics are definitely, you know, the typical Dark Stewart lyrics that he was writing a lot around that time.
And what strikes me about the lyrics is there are so many of them. This is like a huge, you know, you look at it and it just goes on. So many lyrics, even though a lot of it is repetitive, but quite a bit. So he had a lot to say on this topic.
I like all the songs on that House in the Woods session. I think they're all, you know, very interesting and really sit apart from the stuff on Why the Long Face, both maybe not necessarily lyrically, but definitely sonically. They sit apart, I guess, just in the production of them. All right, well, my number four is another one that we've already talked about, and that is Belief in the Small Man. What number was that for you?
That was number 10.
That was
and
number 10.
You have to include Bass Dance.
Yeah, that's right. And I did not include Bass Dance, but you've convinced
me. I'll allow you to add it hastily.
Yeah, thank you. I'm adding it right now. So my number four would be Bass Dance and Belief in the Small Man, because you're right, they do go together. They go perfectly together. And there's not really much more to say about this song than we've already said. You know, just a great song, a great heavy big country song, a heavy and uplifting big country song. I love the beat of the song, mood of the song. Feels like it reminds me of like a giant, you know, a giant creature, a giant robot, like walking toward something. It's just like boom, 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 big giant footsteps. I never really had heard, I don't think when I heard that song, I never really heard a song with that kind of a tribal type of drum beat before, at least not a rock song. And there's something really cool about it. And like all the songs on the Steel Town album and from that period, there's like just all kinds of guitar stuff going on in that song. I mean, it's like an orchestra of guitars happening and so many little parts. And, you know, as I said, we've already said a lot about it, but that was my number four. Great song, yeah. Belief of the Small Man.
One thing we didn't say about it that struck me when you mentioned the rhythm just now. It's almost a waltz, isn't it?
It is very much like that. Yes. It is like a waltz.
So the next time we have waltz evening over here, I'll play on this song.
Good. Perfect. Yeah, I can
Belief
see.
In small, and it's perfectly
I can see you guys waltzing
evening.
To that easily. Yeah, you could waltz around the house to that. That's got to be the heaviest waltz ever recorded.
It might be. Certainly the best.
Three. So we're up to the top three now. And who knows? This might be where we have some overlap, but I'm assuming we'll at least have one, maybe two songs here that overlap. But who knows? Maybe we won't. So what is your number
three?
Yes,
I do expect us to overlap this one. This is one of the epics, which takes us back to the early days. And it should have been the title track from the first album, The Crossing. This is it might be the first true big country epic in my book, even though, you know, Pearl Man is on the album. I don't remember if this came out before or after that in some capacity. I think it was on the Chance single, so probably after.
Okay.
But to me, this is archetypical big country early days. I think there's four or five different parts to this song. And it just follows the theme of, you know, the general early album was very much of the elements. It's the elements and the landscapes.
Yes.
So this is a sort of stride forth out there, and the song is really a journey. And it mentions the compasses and the maps. It mentions all of that stuff. So this is yet again one of those songs that, like the early days, I got more drawn into the sonicness of it than the lyrics. Mm. The lyrics I focused on more later. And it's just, you know, one of those larger-than-life songs. And I can't understand for the life of me why this wasn't on the album.
Yeah, it's an incredible song. Now this is not on my list, and the only reason it's not on my list is because I didn't consider it a B-side since it was on the Wonderland EP. But you know, like we've said before, I mean, it doesn't matter, but that's the only reason I didn't put it on this list. Or else I would have certainly put like Angle Park on here too, because that's one of my favorite all-time big country songs. But so The Crossing is not on my list, but I thought about it when I was doing this, but yeah, what an amazing song that is. I mean, it is like, you're right. It's the first big country epic, and they're playing that one live now too. I don't know if you've heard their version of that with Mike Peters, but
yes, I've heard that, and they've actually played this quite a bit for a so-called B-side. And is it a B-side? So I think it's one of the more played B-sides. So they clearly are proud of this song, and they should be.
I love the song. The lyrics are just so bizarre, though, for that song. Again, it's one of those really abstract, lyrically, it's such an abstract song by Stewart. But they're great. I mean, great lyrics. And the part that gets me every time is that breakdown section when it's just the guitar and the tempo changes and the guitar kicks in. It's like, da 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 da.
Yes.
I mean, that's just so chilling. I mean, that gives you the goosebumps immediately. And that moment right there is just kind of a microcosm to me of what big country is all about and what I love so much about them.
There's another big playout section. I think that final guitar line.
Oh, my gosh. It just goes on and on and on. And you keep waiting for it to end, but you don't really want it to. And it just, you know, it's great.
Yeah, so I think that's at least three songs in our top 10 B-sides that has wonderful, great playout session, and we really get a kick out of those, so why don't they do it more? So
yeah.
They really pull those off.
Exactly.
So do you think it was meant for the album, since they named the album after a song?
It's... Well, I know it was written before anything else, before a lot of other things from The Crossing were written, so I don't understand either why it wasn't on there. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a statement by the band explaining why that was not on the album. The only thing I can think of after it. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's kind of strange. I mean, the only thing I can think of is that they liked Poor Old Man and the Storm more, and they just thought that we'd run out of space. Yeah, but even then, as you say, you know, if they liked the song enough to name the album after it, of course, I'm assuming they named the album after the song. He might have just loved the title, but still, you have to assume, you know, he named it after the song. So yeah, it's very strange. I've seen that happen a couple times with different bands where they have an album that's, you know, named after a song that's not actually on the album but pops up sometime later in their career, but not very often do you see that happen. So yeah, that'd be a great question to ask. So that's your number three. My number three is Song of the South. From the Seer Sessions, this was also produced, kind of like Belief in the Small Man was produced, given the full production by Steve Lillywhite. This was given the full production by Robin Miller, or Millar, I'm not sure how you say his name. But this, you know, this is a great big country song. One of my favorites, obviously, since it's number three. But one of my favorite songs by them, period. I mean, I don't know how I would rank it in the span of all of their songs, but... it's just, I wish this had been on the Seer. I mean, this is another one that I really think would have fit beautifully on the Seer. It could have been, once again, just another one of those issues of space. I mean, personally, I would put this, ironically, I would put this instead of One Great Thing, which, ironically, because it's the B-side to One Great Thing. But I personally think it's a better song. But in reading the notes that Stewart wrote for this, he says... this was done at the power plant with Robin Millar producing. Robin is one of the nicest people I've ever worked with and has remained a source of good advice and inspiration. The song is about apartheid, and I kind of like the idea of using a Disney title for it to show how the media exploit real suffering for ratings. Yeah, Song of the South was a Walt Disney movie from the 1940s, and it's funny because that movie it's never been fully released in any form, I don't believe, only portions of it. I don't know if are you familiar with that at all? Have you ever seen any bits of it?
It doesn't ring any bells.
Okay, there's a song called Zippity Doo-Dah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
everybody knows that song.
Yeah, that's from that movie. That's from the movie Song of the South, and there was a black character in that movie called Uncle Remus, and he was the movie took place shortly after slavery was abolished and shortly after the Civil War ended. And Uncle Remus was this older black gentleman who told all these folk tales to this little white boy who came to visit. And it was kind of a mixture of live action and cartoons. And it's got all these Southern folk stories. It's really, really great stuff. I used to love it when I was a kid. But apparently they haven't released the full movie because there are portions of it that they think would be considered racist. But anyway, back to the song. I mean, I know apartheid was a big issue in music back then, and there was a song, Sun City, that Little Steven did that I think U2 performed on.
Yeah.
So I know that was a big topic of a lot of songs and bands were refusing to play there. So, it's a very topical song for big country, something that's right in line with the kind of stuff they were doing at the time politically, but musically is where it shines for me. I mean, there's a lot of really just interesting Stewart-isms, I would say, you know, a lot of typical great Stewart guitar parts with the droning open strings and the kind of staccato-y rhythm guitars, and it's got the big heavy drums, and it's a very uplifting song even despite the subject matter. Again, you know, It's another one of those big country songs with kind of dark subject matter, but a great uplifting anthemic sounds, and I love it. I especially love the solo section. There's a breakdown, and it's just kind of got this one little lead guitar line that plays over and over again. It's like, and you can also hear someone talking over a loudspeaker in the background, and I cannot understand at all what's being said. I'd like to know. Yeah, I don't know where that came from, but anyway, this is one of my favorites, and it's in the top three, it is number three, so this is a big one for me.
I would definitely agree that the B side is better than the A side for that one, and there's a couple of other songs as well that I would replace it with on the C here.
Yeah.
It is not on my top 10. I didn't even put it on my top 20. To me, it's a good song. It's not a standout song. It's a solid song. I might have to go back. It wouldn't be the first time I go back to a big country song and listen now for those instrumentations you spoke of.
Right.
When you break down a song, sometimes the sums just stand out and increases, you know, the whole sum of it.
Exactly.
So it might be one of those songs. And you're right. It sounds very happy-go-lucky, for sure. It isn't that happy-go-lucky when you dig into the subject, of course. You know, it's and it was a big thing in the 80s, apartheid. It was a really big deal. Whenever a band played, in South Africa, you still talk about it. I think Queen went there. I think Black Sabbath went there, and it still comes up.
That's true. You're right.
Especially Queen, you know, because they still defend that decision to play there.
Wow.
And you know, it's very interesting. So it gets talked about quite a bit. So it does fall into that. And of course, Big Country should have an even stronger voice there because you have Tony being in the band. You know, it would be very near and dear to all of them.
Two. All right. So Song of the South. I wish they'd play that live, but I don't ever imagine that will happen. I can dream. So that's my number three. And let's move on to number two. We're almost to the top of the list. So what's your number two?
All right. My number two, which sometimes is number one, but for the most part, it's a number two. It's not the Big Country original. It's a cover version, and it's tremendous cover version. It's Prairie Rose.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we talked about ferociousness before with Restless Natives. The same applies here. The playing is amazing, especially if you follow the bass line. Tony is really ripping on this song.
Yeah, he is.
And and Mark, you know, he plays as heavy as Mark can. And he can when he wants to, and he does here. So Prairie Rose, it's really kicking up quite a few notches from the original, which I eventually got to play, which I eventually got to listen to. And I'm wondering, why did I pick that song? Why did it stand out to them? And the only thing I can think of is the name check of the lyric. There's a lyric that goes, "The lonesome star shine down on the big country."
That's
and
right.
That always makes
That's
me right. smile.
Yep.
I always listen for that little bit. Lonesome star, shine on the big country. not confirming me, yeah. That's right. And I'm wondering if it is as simple as that. Did they pick the song for that little thing? In the early days, you know, they had a hit with In a Big Country, you know, and then Peros with Stars in a Big Country. So I'm wondering if it's as simple as that.
I'm sure it had a lot to do with that. Now, I will say this. I know that I've read in the past that Stewart was a fan of Roxy Music. So he must have been familiar with, you know, the song and familiar with the band and what they were doing. So.
Yeah.
Maybe he just liked the song, but that line put it over the top for him, because I've heard the original too. It's been a long time and I can't completely remember how it went, which probably speaks a lot to how I felt about it.
Oh, I have to say I like that version. It's good, but I don't really see how you get that version and
exactly.
think, oh, we can do that with this song. I mean, that's it's a tremendous reworking. They almost deserve a writing credit, in my opinion. They took it to a place where it was never really destined to go.
Exactly.
And you're right about Stu's influences. We see some other cover versions that point to 70s glam. We have Lou Reed Vicious, we have David Bowie Cracked Actor, we have those things. And
yep.
some music kind of fall into that. So it does make sense. You can kind of see the taste there and some consistency in the choices.
Yeah, definitely. And that song is not on my list, but it would be in the teens, I would say, you know, in the high teens or the lower teens. Yeah, that's a great song and another great Steel Town B-side and another, you know, one of those Steel Town songs that got the full production treatment too. So I mean, and the drums in that always reminded me of the Tall Ships Go drums. I mean, they just had that, it's just got that driving, just incredible. You know, we throw the word ferocious out a lot, but I mean, that's a great word for it. I mean, it's ferocious. It's just an incredible force of nature, that song. And
it is. It can't be stopped. And
you're right.
And it's amazing how they manage to keep it melodic at the same time. That's sort of like the hook, line, and sinker for me. With a lot of the music I listened to, I mentioned last week, I was a metalhead, and a lot of it comes from a very strong melody played powerfully. And that's exactly what this song is. So early on, I really latched onto this song. I thought it was a standout. Like most of the Steel Town album is a bit like that. You have a strong melody and you play it intensively and ferociously. And it's such a winning combination. It really showed that Big Country knew how to rock.
Exactly. And I also love the end of the song when he, in fact, speaking of Tall Ships Go, when he references the song in the lyric. Awesome song. I remember hearing that for the first time at a friend's house who had the 12-inch, and he played that for me, and he was a Big Country fan as well, and that's how we became friends. So, and being blown away by it. So yeah, that's an awesome tune. Good pick. Okay, so my number two is similar to yours in that sometimes it's number one, and it may be number one next week. My number two and my number one are so close, and I almost switched them today again, but I decided just to keep it as it is. But my number two is Christmas Island. Another Big Country epic. It's got absolutely some of my favorite guitar parts in any Big Country song. I mean, the opening of the song just it just kills me. It's just so incredibly cool and ominous and dark and clever and creative. I love it. The use of the delay there, it goes really well with what the band was doing in those REL sessions. I mean, there was such a cool sound, I think, to the songs that they were recording there, as we talked about with some of the other ones that we've discussed. I mean, there was just like a really great sound that all of them had. It was almost like and the band did produce them themselves, and I just really think that could have been a great album if it would have continued. And to me, this would have been one of the standout tracks on it. I did not know anything about Christmas Island when I heard this song, and I've since come to learn about it. It was a place where the British did some of their earliest nuclear tests back in the 1950s, like a little island in the South Pacific. And there were a lot of Scottish people who worked there, so I'm sure that had a lot to do with Stuart writing the song. And apparently a lot of the testers there were forced to watch these blasts as part of their job, and they weren't given any kind of protective gear. But there was a guy who wrote a description about what happened. The guy who was actually a tester there, and he talks about they were all sitting there waiting, and they were waiting in fear for the bomb to go off because they knew it was going to be detonated. And a voice in a loudspeaker told them, gave a countdown and told them to look away. And so they turned their eyes to look away from the blast. But when the blast happened, the guy said that he could see through his entire arm. He could see the bones in his arm. He could see the blood going through his hand. He could see every part of his arm and hand. And he said he could even see the flash of the nuclear bomb in his hand. And it just seems very surreal and otherworldly. And apparently the people who are still alive who were a part of that have been trying to sue the government for many years. And I just noticed today that they have their own Facebook page that I just liked. It's called Christmas Island Veterans. And so if you're [S2] Wow. [S1] if you're a big country fan out there who loves this song, you should go check that out on Facebook and like it, because I know they're trying to raise awareness for themselves because of the poor way that they were treated and they were handled. They've had all kinds of health issues over the years, and they feel like they've passed a lot of those health issues on to children, and just really awful stuff. So it really puts that song in a whole new light when you read about what actually happened there. So I mean, for me, what grabbed me initially was it came out on Rarities 2, and what grabbed me about it is that I thought that I had heard finally all the REL tape songs. I had no idea that there were any more that still existed. And this was one of those that was a complete surprise. No idea the song ever existed. And it was a great surprise to see that I was going to hear a new big country song. And then what an even better surprise to hear what has become one of my favorite big country songs. Again, talked about the opening, the guitar part. It's another one of those epics. The lyrics are incredibly well written and capture that whole feeling of what was going on there on that island, especially after you read the actual reports. It really makes even more sense. And I love just the little lead parts, and the drumming is incredible. And there's like a certain part of the song where in each verse he will say the line, like in the beginning it's like, for I would not leave such friends as these, and then the music kind of slowly builds, and it keeps building, and then Mark goes into this great little drum roll, and then it goes back into the next verse. And it really could easily be my number one, but today it is my number two.
Yeah, wow. What's left to say? Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No, that's fine. It's really fascinating. I think Stu would be proud that he wrote a song that made you check it up, all this stuff. I'm sure that was part of what he hoped to achieve.
So, yeah.
It's kind of interesting if you think Peace in Our Time and the assumed aiming at the American market, and even though this might be a British thing, that maybe it was deemed too controversial to include on an album for the masses. But then again, Thousand Stairs on the album, so who knows?
Right.
This is not on my list, but that's primarily because I didn't deem it a B-side. But it certainly is a good song. You know, I could have... It probably wouldn't have been in my top 10. It would have been in the lower end of the top sort of 20. I like it a lot. I think... it's interesting how you say it's an epic, because it is. It sort of clocks between 6 and 7 minutes, but it doesn't feel like an epic. It's very sparse. It's more like it's one of those that comes creeping in.
Yes.
So it isn't the full grandiose, you know, it isn't a sweeping mountainside kind of epic like The Crossing.
Right.
It's more like one of those, it builds slowly, and I'm sure that happened to you. It sort of crept in there. And,
yeah.
So it's one of those songs, it's very... neatly pulled off.
Okay, so we are about ready to give the number one, but before we do, I emailed you about this before. I thought it would be cool to give what amounts to our number 11. I mean, if there's one song that you really that it really hurt you not to put in the top 10 list, what would that be?
Yeah, as you know, I put down my top 21, and that's even wrong at this point. So, but 11, I had two songs battling for that spot, and in the end, Over the Border eased out Birmingham.
Ah, cool.
So Over the Border is my number 11. That comes from the same sessions as Christmas Island.
Awesome. And, oh, yeah.
We keep coming back to those sessions. There's something magic about them, and Over the Border is, I think, borderline epic. If not full-blown epic, but that has some of those. It has the slow build-up at first, that sort of small, almost menacing guitar part, and then it grows into a full band, and it never sort of kicks up into high gear, but that's part of the sort of the lure of the song, that it goes on. It's very moody. It has one of those uneasy feelings. It's just an overall very nice feel. I just like that song a lot.
I do too, and yeah, that's a great choice. And for me, it would be the song that I would pick. It's a song that I heard for the first time in a long time recently, so that's why I'm picking it. I don't know, but it's a song that goes a little further, believe it or not, into the Big Country catalog. So it's not one of the older songs, which is what I did to choose. But this song is from the Driving to Damascus sessions, and it's called Dust on the Road. As you said, Living by Memory was your favorite song from all of the Driving to Damascus sessions. I think this is my favorite from that period. Another dark song about abuse. It's about a girl, a little girl. It's kind of almost from her perspective, who's living in a bad environment, and the father is drunk and beating the wife, and at the end, the mother takes the child and they leave. But it's just really, really beautifully written lyrically, and I just love the guitars in it. As we were talking about, as I said about Living by Memory, I think it's just a great, musically, it's a great marriage between the new influences that were creeping up in Stewart's writing and his traditional Big Country Scottish roots. I mean, because you still get like some of the Big Country sounding guitars in it, and yet it's got that Nashville influence as well, but it's like it doesn't sound necessarily country, and it doesn't sound like the old school Big Country, but it's a good combination between the two.
I think that's a great pick. It's I dare you to, how many happy songs are there from those Driving to Damascus sessions?
Yeah,
it's
not many
at all. I think
are there even any?
Bella,
okay,
Bella Don't Cry, that's uplifting, right?
Yeah, except for me, because that's a song I don't like, but yes.
So when you hear it, you get sad.
Okay. Exactly.
Yeah, so there are no uplifting songs at all on Driving to Damascus, but therein lies some of the attraction. I would agree that Dust on the Road is definitely one of the better songs from those sessions. And I have in front of me a quote from Stewart that he replied to a post on the official bulletin board when he was asked about this song. He wrote it with a friend in Nashville, Christy Siemens, and played it to the guys, and they loved it, and so they rattled off a version. That's more or less his take on it, that he played it, they liked it, they sort of hammered it down, and that's it, and who knows what they could have made of it if they decided to go for it for a full version. So,
I know. Yeah. I just think that song is so much better than, a number of songs on Driving to Damascus that I could name, but, we say this about all the B-sides.
Shut up!
One.
Well, okay. Well, here we are then. We are at number one. So,
yes, I have to say the overlaps have not been as many as expected.
No, same here. Definitely, it's been pretty cool actually. There's been a lot of interesting lists here, I think. So, okay. Well, I'm gonna cue my drum roll here. And what is your number one Big Country B-side of all time?
All right. I know for a fact that you don't have it as your number one, simply by the criteria you stated earlier. it is on the Wonderland EP.
Okay.
It's All Fall Together.
Oh, yeah.
So that has been one of my favorites, if not the favorite Big Hunter song since I heard it. It is in the same mold as The Storm. In my mind, I even consider them twin songs. They're a bit related. They have some of the same mood.
Oh, yeah.
And even the lyrics, to me, is slightly about the same thing, which, you know, a lyric analysis of the early years is almost impossible. It's very grandiose. It's very epic. It's very abstract at times. But you have these glimpses, right? And especially in the early years, for me, it was like glimpses of lyrics that stood out, and I grabbed those and attached their own meanings. And it's almost like a follow-up to The Storm for me, where you have... I always, for some reason, think of it back in time, and The Storm can be anything. It's something approaching, something with doom, right? So it could be a physical storm that is so devastating that it leaves destruction, or it could be, you know, for that matter, a Viking invasion. It could be, or some hordes, or it could be anything. It could even be on sort of the personal level, that there is something, an impending doom that is going to happen.
Right.
Even though the lyrics to that song is very much... nature-y, you know, being washed out by the rain and all of those things. They seem to be very, you know, lend itself to nature imagery and those things. So The Storm can be sort of literal, but I think there's it can be anything, really. So All Fall Together, it's kind of like now it's no longer impending. Now it's actually happening. And lyrically, the subject matter is a kind of doomsday scenario. We're all going down, and there are some lyrics that really just stand out and gives me chills. Like no other song can give me chills. It's a simple line. We've changed forever.
Yep.
And change is good, right? You know, there has to be change, and change can be a development and an improvement. But we've changed forever, and that forever part seems to indicate there's no going back. This has happened. It's, you know, something has been lost somehow. Exactly. So it's very dramatic. And the entire song
just gave me... You just gave me chills when I thought about it. I literally just had chills go through me.
So, so it very much is like that. And we've changed forever. There's no going back. Now it's happened, or it's happening.
As you said, the only reason this song wouldn't be on my list is because I didn't consider the Wonderland EP to be B-sides. But this is definitely one of my favorite Big Country songs. And it's also one of my wife's favorite songs. In fact, she claims that... she tears up every time the beginning of that song comes on, and she's right. I mean, it's really one of the most beautiful openings of a song that I've ever heard. I mean,
exactly. It pulls you in, and then sort of the doomsday scenario starts. So it's
kind
of like they lure us in, and then they smack you.
Exactly. It sounds almost like sirens, like mythical sirens. Not the sirens on a police car, but like the old Greek mythology sirens calling someone to the rocks, you know, in the beginning. They're like singing a sweet song and drawing you in, and then once you get there, those drums kick in and you're in trouble. That's a great number one pick. Now my number one pick, in case you're wondering why I didn't say much about Over the Border when you brought that up,
I had a feeling.
I was going to, but then I thought, well, you know, I'll just save it. But it's because Over the Border is my number one Big Country B-side of all time.
I have discussed Big Country with you for many years, so
yes.
I had an inkling.
Exactly. So I didn't want you to feel like I was ignoring your choice there. I just wanted to save a little bit. But, this song, as I said before, this song and Christmas Island do a constant, eternal battle for number one of the Big Country B-sides. Today, Over the Border has won. Maybe tomorrow, Christmas Island will win. But these two go at it all the time. But Over the Border, to me... kind of, we were talking about the opening of All Fall Together. To me, Over the Border, from what I like, it's got the best opening of any Big Country song ever. The opening of that song it just kills me. It's so powerful and so emotional for me, and
it's so simple. It's really clever.
Yeah, exactly. It's so simple and yet so clever and so powerful, and every little part just kind of builds, and I just love that. I love how, you know, each piece slowly comes in, and until, you know, I just love on all those REL session songs, I love how they just take their time with each song. I mean, it seems like all the songs are very long, and I think Stewart was hurt by that sometimes, you know, because he tended to write long songs. He tended to have difficulty writing the short 3-minute single. You know, even the songs Big Country released as singles, they were always heavily edited, almost to the point where, you know, I thought they suffered from the editing, but that could just be because I was used to the longer versions. I don't know, but you know, these REL session songs, all of them seem to be like at least 5 minutes long, you know. But and this is another one of those epic songs. It's not quite as long as some of the others, but it's, you know, it's got like so many great passages in it, and they just take [S2] Yes. [S1] Their time and they build it. And what disappoints me about it is that reading what Stewart says about it. He says, this is one of the tracks we came up with during the period of inactivity between leaving Mercury in the USA and going to Warner's. And that was, I guess they went to Warner's for the Peace in Our Time album. So, you know, is between the Seer and Peace in Our Time, as we already know. Yeah, yeah. He said it started out as a 12-string piece It started out as a 12-string piece that Bruce had. And I built it into the chorus. This is one of those tracks, like a lot on this album, that really still needs work to become a song. This is actually a demo recorded at REL in Edinburgh. The song is about how you can never run from yourself. So what disappoints me is that he thought it was a track that still needs work to become a song. I mean, to me, this is just a stellar song as it stands. I don't know what else you would do to it. I mean, it's just, the lyrics are great. The music is great. The performances are great. I mean, when he sings that line, you know, hold up out in Denver in the snow, and then howling in my room, howling in my ear, howling in my soul. I mean, that just that's one of those lines that gives me the goosebumps and gives me the chills. And yeah, I just think it's an incredible song. I mean, I love the line, the spirit of the people who light a fire in the wind. I think that was really indicative of the whole mindset of Big Country at the time. You know, that goes really along with the Stay Alive line. You know, at this point, he's still writing about staying strong even in the midst of adversity. And, you know, sadly, that would kind of deteriorate for him over time, as we talked about. You know, once he got to Living by Memory, there was nothing, you know, nobody was lighting a fire in the wind. They were just kind of laying there and letting it blow over them.
Yeah, no hope, nothing to live for. So
exactly, exactly. And this is still one of those songs where he's got that feeling of, you know, I'm still going to stick it out. And I just love it. I love the. It's got everything. It's got the slow parts, the soft parts, kicks into the hard edge Big Country stuff. One of my favorites of all time.
Yeah, and I have to say, part of the strength of this song, like I briefly said before, was that it doesn't start galloping off. They manage to restrain it. They keep it to that in that tempo that the, you know, which keeps it slightly mysterious. It keeps the mood, and I think it would be too easy to make it a full-fledged epic. And maybe that's what it's hinting at when it needs more work. You know, no, stop
could,
there.
Could
stop
be.
There, Stu. Nothing more.
That's right. That's right. Shut up! Well, that was fun. I mean, we've gone through a lot of songs, had a lot of good discussion about them, and. Yeah, I mean, I want to thank you for being a part of it, and hopefully we'll do many more.
Yeah, I'm really happy to be part of this. Like a lot of people, there were many years I didn't listen to Big Country, but I've been getting into it again, and doing this countdown, so to speak, has been really fun. And listening to the songs, trying to determine the list, just getting back into it again. So thank you for that.
Okay, so that's it. I hope you enjoyed this countdown, and, you know, we had a great time doing it, as you could hopefully hear.
And we may have differed a little bit on what constitutes B-sides as we went along, but it gets confusing. And there's so many big country rarities, and non-album tracks might have been a better way to do this whole thing in hindsight. But, you know, whatever. We picked great songs, and I hope you guys enjoyed the discussion. So that's going to be it for Episode 4 of The Great Divide. We'll be back probably in about a month or so. And we're going to be doing a discussion of No Place Like Home. We're going to be talking about the album track by track. And before that, we're going to be talking about the state of the band in that period of time before they recorded and released No Place Like Home, when they were doing the Heart of the World singles and when they had Pat Ahern in the band. So we'll be talking about what that was like from a fan's perspective and what we think of those songs and that album and that whole period. So it should be really interesting. So in the meantime, I just want to say, if there are any great songs that you've heard on these podcasts and you don't have them already, please buy them. You can buy them online through a variety of places, Amazon.com, iTunes. There's pretty much the whole big country catalog is up on those areas if you want to just get them online. And you can always, of course, go to the official site to buy these things. I mean, I know pretty much everyone who's listening to this is probably already very familiar with these things and probably already has the entire big country catalog. But I just want to make sure that, you know, nobody thinks we're playing full-length big country songs here or giving anyone a way to get music for free that they should buy. So support the band, as always, and I'm sure all of you do. Support the band, buy their releases, and, you know, keep showing them that we love their music. Okay, so finally, I want to really extend a big thanks to John Gouveia, who hosts another great big country site, bigcountry.info. He has graciously volunteered to host these podcasts, and both Svein and I really appreciate it. It's been a big help to us. Neither one of us had any free web space around, and we were trying to figure out the best way to host these things. We want to provide them on iTunes here soon as well. So John has agreed to host these for us, and we really appreciate it. And, you know, if you don't know already, his site is just an incredible wealth of big country information that he has lovingly and painstakingly created. Pretty much any type of info you want to know about the band's output over the years, you can find on John Gouveia's site, bigcountry.info. And we're going to be talking to John Gouveia, too, at some point on a future podcast. He has had a lot of great experiences with the band. He's traveled with them closely, and he's kind of become a legendary big country fan. So we want to talk to him and get some of his, whatever he can tell us, whatever he's allowed to tell us, we want to hear from some of his experiences on the road with big country. So we'll do that in the future. So we really appreciate the feedback. The feedback keeps us going and gets us excited about doing more big country podcasts. So, you know, without the feedback, there's no point in doing it. So if you like these, please let us know. You can find us on Facebook. Just search for The Great Divide, the Big Country Podcast, if you aren't a friend of that page already. You can also email us at bigcountrypodcast@gmail.com. bigcountrypodcast@gmail.com. And if I may, I want to just give a little bit of shameless self-promotion here. As most of you probably know, and I've said it enough times, I'm a musician as well. I record my own music and release my own music. And you can find some of that and listen to it for free, of course, at a site called Reverb Nation, ReverbNation.com /Thomas Kercheval. And my name is Thomas Kercheval. So ReverbNation.com /Thomas Kercheval. You can find a lot of my songs on there, and you know, give a listen. I'd love to hear what you think of those too. Certainly very big country influenced, but you know, I'm not sitting out to copy big country. They just happen to be my major influence, so that certainly comes through in the music. If you like them, maybe you'll like my stuff too. Who knows? I also have a CD available for download on iTunes under the name Dis, which is the name I was releasing music under for a while, and that album is called Greenhorn. So if you're on iTunes, do a search for Dis and Greenhorn, and you'll find that there. You can, you know, preview the songs. You can even buy it if you feel so inclined. But check it out. And so with that in mind, I'm going to end the show with a cover that I did along with my lovely wife, who is also a huge big country fan. And since we're talking about B-sides, I thought it would be appropriate to play one of our covers of a big country B-side that was on both my list and Svein's list. This is our version, our stripped-down version of Belief in the Small Man. Hope you enjoy it, and we will see you next time on The Great Divide. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you.
Just as one life turns from birth, just as the ring finds its worth, just as the leaf turns to gold, so you and I will be sold, sold for the work done. While we could feel young, sold for the new sun, gold for the pure one. Where does our home lie? When is our own? Lonely the cold cry, only unknown. So you and I will be sold.